Okay, so today we're going to do the last two sugyas. It's really all one big sugya of Sveik Sveika, but we separated into two. The first one is called Shalish Yatsa Miktsasa Ein Latara Miyom Rishon, and the second one was called Sveik Sveika B'yesh Miktsas Shalya B'lo Vlad. But it's really all one big sugya of Sveik Sveika, and these are the last two sugyas before the Bechina, so hopefully when we're done with these, everyone can chazer and have much, much hatzlacha on the Bechina. And the first part of the sugya, we could just call it Sveik Sveika number one, has, I guess, four major parts. We have Tosfos' question, then the question of whether Sveik Sveika works against Chazaka, why would Sveik Sveika work against Chazaka, and then Tosfos' answer. So I guess we'll start with the first sugya, and if anyone has any questions, feel free to ask. And yeah, let's go for it. So the Gemara, Bava Kama Yir Aleph Amir Aleph, quotes a din of Ula, the name of Rabbi Elazar, that says that if we're unsure whether on which day the Shilya came out, then Ula says that we count from Yom Rishon, seemingly to be Machmir. So we assume that the Shilya came out the first day, so anything that this woman touched on the first day is going to be Tameh. And Rava asks on this din of Ula, you think you're coming to be Machmir, you're really coming to be Mekil, because if you count from the first day, then the 15th day she's going to be Tahar. But actually, yeah, she's going to be Tahar. And let's just explain this, give some background information beforehand. A woman, we know from the beginning of Parshas Tazria, has what's called Dmei Leda, that she gives there's blood comes out when she gives birth, and there's a question of whether this blood makes her Tameh or Tahor. So when she gives birth to a boy, the first 7 days are days of Tumah, and she's going to be Tameh when blood comes out, but the 33 days after that are called Dmei Tahara. And when a woman gives birth to a girl, those amounts are doubled. So the first 14 days are going to be Dmei Tumah, and then the 66 days after that, up until day 80, are going to be Dmei Tahara. So the Gemara is talking about where a woman miscarries and has a Shilya come out, or we're unsure whether it's a real miscarriage. Just something comes out of her, and there's a question of whether there was a Vlad inside. Maybe there's not a question, but we want to know if there was a Vlad inside. So the Gemara seems maybe it was a Vlad, and if it was in a Keva, then there are 14 days of Tumah. And we don't know when to start this day, because we don't know whether she gave birth on day one or day two. So the Gemara quotes Ula's din and says, go by Yom Rishon, that anything, that even from the first day she's going to be Tameh. That's Ula's din. So Rava says, why are you coming to be Mekel? You thought you were going to be Machir because the first day she's Tameh, but rather you're really coming to be Mekel because the 15th day, according to your count, she's going to be Tahor, because when you count 14 days starting from day 1, then the 15th day is Tahor. If you would have started from day 2, then the 15th day would be Tameh. That's Rava's question. So Rava says rather we should be Choshesh from the first day, that Choshesh that anything she touched is going to be Tameh from the first day, but still she only counts her days starting from the second day, and therefore on day 15 she's also going to be Tameh. So Tosfos asks a question. Again, I guess we'll get back to this at the end of the second sugya, but the Gemara never mentions anything about Sveik Sveika. But Tosfos asks a question about Sveik Sveika, which really brings the whole sugya alive. Tosfos says, why is Rava so concerned that she's going to be Tahor on the first day, according to Ula counting from day number one? Sorry, why is Rava concerned that she's going to be Tahor on the 15th day, the first day after she has the days of Tumah? Even if we're unsure of what happened, there's a Sveik Sveika that should permit her. What's the Sveik Sveika? Well, a suffix whether it was a Zachar or an Akeva, right? If it was a Zachar, then for sure the 15th day she's going to be Tahor. Because you're only Tameh for the first 7 days for a Zachar, so day 15 is somewhere in the middle of the 33 days of Tahara. So if you're a Zachar, you're for sure good. And even if you're an Akeva, there's still a suffix. Suffix whether she gave birth on the first day or the second day. And if she gave birth on the first day, then by 15 she's going to be Tahor because the 14 days are up. And only if she gave birth to an Akeva on the second day, she's going to be Tameh. So she has a valid Sveik Sveika that should permit her on the 15th day. Why is Rava so concerned, Rebbe would say, tzahist, about the 15th day? It should be Tahor because of Sveik Sveika. That's Tosfos' question, and from there gets the ball rolling. So the first major part we had of the major discussion we have just in Tosfos' question before we even get to the answer is the idea of using Sveik Sveika against the Chazaka. The Shita Megubetzis points out that Tosfos uses Sveika against the Chazaka. That in this case, she had a Cheskas Tuma. We know that she was Tameh for the first, let's say, 7 days at least, or if it was a girl, the first 14 days. And therefore, this 15th day, she has a Cheskas Tuma, and Tosfos still used Sveika. So we want to know if that's true. The Shita Megubetzis says, we see from here, Tosfos must hold, you could use Sveika against Chazaka, and we're going to search through other cases in Shas to see if people would agree. So we're going to look at two Gemaras in Chulin, and based on those Gemaras, we could extract certain opinions who hold of Sveika against Chazaka or don't hold of Sveika against Chazaka. So the first Gemara that we saw is the Gemara in Chulin Daf Chaf Chasim and Beis, which is talking about Shechita. We know that in order to shecht an animal and permit it, its meat for consumption, you have to shecht two simanim, the kana and the veshet, the trachea and the esophagus, and the Zalacha Moshe Mishina, you don't have to shecht the whole thing, you just have to shecht the robe of each of those. So the Gemara is discussing, let's say you shecht exactly 50%, so it's a machlokas amara, machlokas whether exactly 50% is good. So Tosfos on the spot, in Chulin Chaf Chasim and Beis, quotes the name of Rabbi Shimon, and he says, according to both opinions, whether you hold exactly 50% is good, or whether you hold exactly 50% is no good, they both hold like the Rabbanan. What's the Rabbanan? The Rabbanan hold, E. Efshar Letzamtzim, that it's not possible to know for certain that someone shechted exactly 50%. We can't calculate with such precision that we know exactly 50% was shechted. That's not possible. So why, this explains Rabbi Shimon, would someone say that you're allowed to have the meat that shechted exactly 50% if we can't ascertain that it was 50% exactly? He says, he doesn't use the word sveik sveika, but he says there's a suffix whether it's exactly, it's above 50 or not. I mean, if it's above 50%, then it's a rove. And even if it's not above 50, maybe you got it exactly 50%. And exactly 50% is valid, according to one Amora. And according to the other Amora, you have the same thing, but in reverse. Maybe it was less than 50, which is no good. And even if it wasn't less than 50, maybe it was exactly 50. And therefore, exactly 50 would be no good. So Rabbi Shimon explains how each of these Amoram would hold in a case of EF Charlotte Sam, in case of exactly 50%, they both hold that it's not possible to say exactly 50% was shechted, but still the sheet does work out. So according to this Rabbi Shimon, it seems to be that according to Manda Amar that 50% is good, we use a fake sveika. Suffolk whether it was 50% or not. And either let's say we got 50% on the dot, that's going to be good, that's going to be kosher. Even if we didn't get 50%, maybe it was a little bit above as opposed to a little bit below, and that seems to be a sveik sveika against the chazaka. Because here, the animal, before it was shechted, had a chazaka that was aser. We quote a machlokas to Rashi Tosfos, what that chazaka exactly would be. Rashi said it's Aver Menachai, and Tosfos says it's an iser asay of Eina Zvucha. And whatever repercussions those would have about Eina Zerchal, about Ein Machzik and Me Iser La Iser. But that's the first Gemara, and this Gemara, this Tosfos on the Gemara seems to be invoking the rule of Sveik Sveika even against Chazaka. Gemara number two is a Gemara in Chulin Daf Yud, and the Gemara is talking about Shechita as well, and it's talking about when a knife has a pagima. A knife has to have a certain level of sharpness in order to shecht, and let's say someone checks the knife after Shechita was done, and the knife is not as sharp as the halacha requires, and it was less sharp than he originally thought. What's going to be the din? So Rav Huna says that even if someone shechts, let's say, one animal, and then shechts bones after that, so shechts a whole bunch of bones, a whole bunch of animals and bones, and then after all the animals are done, he sees that the knife is blunt. The knife is not as sharp as it's supposed to be. What do we say about the shechita of the first animal? So Rav Huna says, even the first animal is no good, because maybe the knife was blunted before the shechita. Maybe it was blunted when you shechted the skin of the first animal, and by the time you got to the simanim, then it wasn't a valid shechita, because the knife was already dull by that point. That's Shita's Rav Huna. And the Masas Binyamin, quoted by the Shach, says that Rav Huna seems to be going against the Sveik Sveika. What potential Sveik Sveika would there be? So, if you look at the first animal of all the sets of animals that was shechted, you could say, and afterwards, let's say you shecht one animal, then you shecht 10 more animals, and you check the knife after the 10 animals, and the knife is no good. So you could say, well, when did this knife become smooth? When did it lose its sharpness? Suffolk whether it was on the first animal or on any of the other ensuing animals. And if it was on any of the other ones, then the first shechita would be good. And even if it was on the first animal, even if the knife became invalid on the first animal, suffik when that happened. Suffik, it was before you shechted the simanim, or maybe it was after you shechted the simanim on some of the bones afterwards. So it seems to be that there's a sfeik on this Gemara, which should permit the shechita of the first animal, and the Gemara still paskins that the animal, that the shechita is no good. So the Masas Binyamin says, we see from here that it's sfeik against the cheskas iser. Again, this animal that's not shechted has a cheskas iser. And you can't use a sfeik against the cheskas iser, which is again Sadashid ibn Gebetz explains our Gemara in at the Tosfos in Bava Kamma. And that's what he says. We see from this Gemara, sfeik doesn't work against cheskas iser. The Shach comes to the defense of the opinion of Tosfos, the opinion of the ones who do hold of sfeik against the cheskas iser, and he says the reason why the sfeik is invalid is not because it's against cheskas iser. Sfeik can work against cheskas iser. So what's the problem here? This is a horrible sfeik. There's only one suffix in this Gemara. When we're looking at the first animal, we want to see if the shechita was good. We say, when did this pegima happen? Before the shechita or after the shechita? You could ask it in certain ways that allow you to say that there are two sfeikos and three sfeikos and all these questions. It's one question. When did it happen? Before or after? And there's a shach called a sfeik mishem echad. It's only one type of suffix. And since it's one type of suffix, that's not a sfeik. But if we really did have a good sfeik, it would work against chazaka. So those are all the evidence. So, just to review, we had our Gemara, where Rava was concerned with Ula's din that it was too makel, and instead he gave a more machmir approach. Tosfos asks, what's the problem with Ula's machmir approach, with Ula's makel approach, because there's a valid sfeik-sfeika, which seemed to apply, could use sfeik-sfeika against cheskas iser, and we had two Gemaras, we had Shitas Rabbi Shimon in Tosfos, Chulun Chaf Chesmer Beis, which is talking about exactly 50%. There, Rabbi Shimon seems to use the rule of sfeik-sfeika even against cheskas iser, and Rav Huna seems to not use sfeik-sfeika against cheskas iser, either because it's not a good sfeik-sfeika, like the Shach says, or like the Masas Binyamin, that you can't use sfeik-sfeika against cheskas iser. So now we have the question of why would it work or not work against cheskas iser? So in order to answer that question, we have to see why sfeik-sfeika works in general. So the question of how sfeik-sfeika works is a big machlokas between the Rambam and the Rashba. The Rambam is in Hilchos Tumas Hameis, Perek Tes, Halacha Yud Beis, and the Rambam has a very famous shita, and he says that any cases of safek tuma are only asa midirabanan. And the Rambam goes on to list other cases, safek iser Shabbos, safek iser Arayos, all the sfeikos that we have, they're all only asa midirabanan. That's all the Rambam says. And Achronim extract from this opinion that since a safek is only asa midirabanan, we have the rule of safek d'oraisa l'chumra, but that chumra is only a din d'rabanan. So if we were to have a safek within a safek, you have a suffik and a din derabanan, because the first suffik is only asumi derabanan. A suffik deraisa is really mutter min haTorah, it's just asumi derabanan. So if you have a suffik on that iser derabanan, that's a suffik derabanan, which we know goes lakula. So people say, the Achronim say, the Pnei Yeshua says, and the Bedek HaBayis, the Ra'ah says, in the name of the Rambam, and how does sfeik work? The first suffik makes the iser only an iser derabanan, and the second suffik is a suffik derabanan, which is lakula. So that's known as shitas harambam. It's known as two steps. The first suffik brings you down from an iser derais to an iser derabanan. The second suffik from an iser derabanan to mutter, and that's how sfeik works. So how's that going to tell us anything about sfeik against cheskas iser? Well, both of these two steps are questionable when they come in the context of a cheskas iser. So the question of whether you could bring down an iser d'oraisa to an iser d'rabbanan from one suffik, so Achronim explained that that's only valid when you don't have a chazaka against you. But if you do have a chazaka, then even the suffik doesn't bring it down from the d'oraisa to d'rabbanan. So if there's a cheskas iser, even one suffik is going to remain as an iser d'oraisa, and then the sfeik would not be able to permit the item. And similarly, Achronim explained that the second step is also invalid against the cheskas iser. When we say a suffik derabanan is lakula, a suffik derabanan is totally mutter, so that is only if there's no chazaka against it. But if there's a cheskas iser against that suffik, or a cheskas iser telling us that something's aser, then you can't bring it down from an iser derabanan to a kula, to mutter completely. So the pashas, according to the Shitas HaRambam, that the way sfeik works would not work against chazaka, against the cheskas iser. What about according to the Rashba? So the Rashba is another is also very famous opinion against the Rambam, who says, "What are you talking about? That a suffik iser is only usser midirabanan. That is suffik deraisa lachumer. That's only the midirabanan. That's just the Rashba says that's ridiculous. That's an iser deraisa." So the Rashba in the Shud HaRashba in the Shadows Retrievos Chelak Aleph Simen Taf Aleph is quoted as saying that the reason Sfeik works is midin rov. That Sfeik works from the rov. And what's the rov? Because in every Sfeik you have four logical possibilities. You have Suffik, the first Suffik you have either something's Usser or Mutter, and even within the opinion that it's Usser, you have a Suffik in that, a second Suffik of whether something's Usser or Mutter. So you have these two questions, and when you have two separate questions independent of each other, you could answer the questions in four different ways, right? Yes to the first, yes to the second, yes to the first, no to the second, no to the first, yes to the second, no to the first, no to the second. And those four possibilities, three of them would lead to a heter, and one of them would lead to an issur. So that's called a rove of possibilities. That's a rove of logical possibilities in front of us. Rebbe called it a blackboard rove, and that would tell us that something's mutter. So how does that impact on the discussion of whether Sfeik would work against a chazaka? Because we know that there's another question, rove against chazaka. Does rove work against the chazaka? So that's a machlok between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Meir. What's the case? The case is you have a kid that's next to a piece of bread, and the kid has a rove that he's tamei. There's a rove that the kid's tamei. Either that rove kids are tamei, or all kids are tamei, and there's a rove that he touched the bread, but there's a rove that this bread is tamei. Rule that the bread is tamei, but the bread has a cheskas heter. We know it was tahor yesterday. We know it was tahor before it came in contact with the kid. So what do we say? Rove against chazaka. Rove tells us that the bread is tamei. Chazaka tells us that the bread is tahor. So that's machlokas Rabbanan and Rabbi Meir. The Rabbanan say the bread is tahor. Ruba v'chazaka ruba adif. That the rove, sorry, the bread is going to be tamei because of ruba v'chazaka ruba adif. That since the rove tells us that the bread is tamei, so we're going to pass the bread is tamei. And Rabbi Meir says, no, not so fast. We don't use the rule of Rubah v'chazaka Rubah Adif because we have to look at the different factors in play. The rule tells us that the bread is tamei, but the chazaka tells us it's tahor. And there's one other thing that we're forgetting about, which is a miyad. In every case of rove, the other side of the rove is a miyad. The majority is one opinion, but the minority is another opinion. So since Tahor has both a chazaka and a miyad, that's going to beat out the rove. That's machlokas between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Meir. So we see from the Rabbanan, the rule of ruba v'chazaka, ruba adif, and according to the Rashba that sfeik sfeika is midin rove, then rove would work against the chazaka, because since rove beats out chazaka, and sfeik sfeika is a type of rove, sfeik sfeika would also beat out chazaka. And then, I'm not going to get into the details, but we quote the opinion of Rabbi Yutam, who held that the rule of Ruba v'chazaka Ruba Adef is only a din d'Rabbanan, and really is only a din d'Oraisa, and d'Rabbanan were really machmir. He was quoting the case of Cholei Poter or Cholei Eino Poter, and according to this Shita of Rabbi Yutam, that Ruba v'chazaka Ruba Adef only works on a din d'oraisa, but the Rabbanan were machmir, then maybe sfeik we could say it doesn't work against chazaka also, because sfeik is a type of rov, and it would work on a d'oraisa level, but it would not work on a d'Rabbanan level against chazaka. So that's the machlokas between the Rambam, who says sfeik works in two steps. First suffik bringing you from issur d'oraisa to issur d'Rabbanan, second suffik bringing you from issur d'Rabbanan to heter, and we said according to the Rishita Sarambam, sfeik will not work against chazaka, because both of those steps are questionable, and according to the Rashba, where sfeik works within rov, that the pashtus is going to work against chazaka, because ruba v'chazaka ruba adif, and we had the one caveat of Shita Sabinu Tam, who holds ruba v'chazaka ruba adif isn't as ironclad as we originally thought. And the last part of the sugya was Tosfos' answer, that sfeik working in the makom tarti disaster. Tosfos says, why was Rava so concerned about a potential kula of ula, that he had to be machir? That kula is well-founded, because there's a sfeik. So Tosfos answers that sfeik is no good. Why? Because what's the sfeik? The sfeik was a question about the 15th day. And how was the 15th day made mutter? Because maybe it was a zachar, and zachar is going to be tamei. And even if it was a zachar, maybe she gave birth on the first day, and by the 15th day she'd be tahor. So maybe it was zachar, or maybe it was yom rishon. Tosfos says there's another potential question where we could have a sfeika as well in the same case. Let's fast forward a couple weeks. until we get to the woman's 41st day. And when we get to the 41st day, we want to question whether she's going to be tamei or tahor on this 41st day. Now, if she's in the keva, then for sure she's tamei. She's tahor. She's somewhere in the middle of her 66 days of yemei tahara. 66 days of tahara. So for sure she's going to be she's tahor on day 41. And even if you're going to say it was a zachar, then there's still a question. If the zachar was born on the first day, then only you're going to have days 1 through 40, right? The first 7 days are going to be tameh, and days 8 through 40 are going to be tahor, but day 41, the yemei tahor are over. But if you say that the zachar came out the second day, then the first 7 days are going, the first 7 days starting from the second day, so really days 2 through 8 are going to be tahor, are going to be tameh, and days 9 through 41, the next 33 days, are all going to be tahor, and it would come out that the 41st day is the last day of the woman's yemei tahara. So we have a sveik sveika to permit a woman on the 41st day. Maybe it was she gave birth to an akeva, and she'd for sure be tahor, and even if she gave birth to a zachar, maybe the zachar was born on the second day, in which case she'd also be tahor. And Tosfos said that would be a potential sveik sveika to permit the woman on the 41st day. So Tosfos says, what's the problem? What's wrong with these? He says these two sveik sveikas are sasri ahadadi. They're in contradiction with one another. The first sveik sveika on the 15th day, in order to permit her, we have to say sufik zachar, and even if you're going to say zachar, sufik yom rishon, for the nekeva. Sufik yom rishon for the nekeva. You have to say zachar and rishon. According to the second one, for day 41st, you have to say the opposite stadim. You have to say maybe it was in the keva, and even if it was in the zachar, maybe it was day sheni. And those two fake fakers are called sasi ahadadi. Now, just as a side point, we didn't mention this in Shir, but these fake fakers aren't totally contradictory, because there are certain stadim which you could say make both days 15 and 41, make them both tahor. If you say that it's in the keva on the second day, then that would both be tahor according to the 15th day and the 41st day. A keva on the first day, or zachar on the second day would actually fit with both of these. But Tosfos nonetheless calls it a sfeik sfeika to sasri adadi. Fine. So what's the problem with a sfeik sfeika to sasri adadi? So let's look at one more example and then get into an explanation. So Tosfos in Zevachim, Daf Ayin Aleph Amud Aleph, which says that if you have one chiyuv skila who gets mixed into a whole bunch of chiyuv sreifa, what's the din? So it's within Shita Sabi Shimon, who holds that sreifa is a harsher punishment than skila, which is against the Rabbanan. So you have one chiyuv skila, which is the less harsh punishment, and a bunch of chiyuv sreifa, which is a more harsh punishment, they all get mixed up. Now we know, as a general rule, that you're allowed to give someone a lower punishment than they deserve, but you can't give someone a harsher punishment than they deserve. So what does Tosfos say to do? So the Gemara paskins that when we have all these people, most of them are chiyuvei sreifa, one of them is chiyuvei skila, we give all of them skila. We give every single one skila, and therefore they're all given a viable death penalty. They're all given a death penalty that works for them, because either it's going to be the chiyuv skila who deserves that, or it's a chiyuv sreifa who's supposed to get sreifa, but skila would be good b'dievet as well. So Tosfos asks if there's a rule that most of the chiyuvei misa in here that are mixed in are sreifa, which is the harsher punishment. So why don't we give everyone the harsher punishment of sreifa? And Tosfos has a bunch of answers, and his second answer is, we know that there's one guy who's a chiyuv skila, and if we give every single person a chiyuv sreifa, there's going to be one guy who doesn't have a valid punishment. The chiyuv skila is not going to have a valid punishment, because he's going to get sreifa, which is more harsh than he deserves. So what do we see from this Tosfos? Tosfos doesn't use rov in a makum tarchi desasre, in a case where there's a logical contradiction, because our din is going to be contradicting reality. The din of rov, saying that everyone's a sreifa, and giving everyone chiyuv sreifa, is not going to work against the one guy who's a skila. It's not going to be a valid punishment. So if we were correct before in saying that Tosfos holds seik seikas midin rov, then we see that this Tosfos is l'shitasu with our Tosfos, that you can't use Sfeik or you can't use Ruv in a makum tartidisasri in a case where it's contradictory. What's the explanation for this? Why would you not be able to use Ruv against tartidisasri? In the case of tartidisasri, so Rav Chanan explains that Ruv could either be viewed as a birur or a hanhaga. Ruv could either be a birur. Ruv tells us these are what the facts are. That, let's say, there are three pieces of meat on the table, two of them are kosher, one of them is non-kosher. You could have a piece of meat, and Ruv tells us that the piece of meat you are having is the one that's kosher. Ruv tells us what the facts are. It tells you you're eating a kosher piece of meat. The other way of saying Ruv, a hanhaga, is not that Ruv tells us what the actual mitzias is, and that Ruv is telling us what is happening in reality. Ruv just tells us, act a certain way. It tells us, this is the psak. That you should pass that the meat is kosher and therefore you'll be able to eat it. But not we don't necessarily know that the meat is kosher because there's a meat against it, but Rov tells you that you could eat it anyway.
Is this the same Rav Nachman said about the Kloptaina, about Migo, which is it being a bureau?
It's not the same piece, but it's the same person, same Rav Nachman. Yeah. Yeah. What?
Is that the same idea?
The same idea, that Migo could eat it.
Kloptaina versus Migo being a bureau.
Yeah, he asked the same question there. But I guess it's the same Chakira. Yeah, about Ahanhaga versus Bira. Yeah, good connection. I guess, and Rebbe explained actually that Rove, that Migo was working Midin Rove, according to one of the Tzadim. So Rebbe called it a Rove. So I guess according to where Rebbe explained it, that it would be actually the Rav Chanan Lashitasa. That depending on how you define Migo, is going to be dependent on how you define Rove. Good point. So yes, there's this question of Rove, whether it's a Bira or a hanhagan, and if you say Rove is a birur, Rove is telling us what the facts of the case are, then you can't use it in a case where it contradicts reality. You can't use a Rove, which is supposed to tell us what the reality is, to dictate a case that we know is false. We know that not every guy deserves Sreifa. We know that in the case of the woman, that she's not going to be Torah on both days. So you can't use the Rove to tell us that she's Torah on both days. You can't use a Rove to say that everyone gets Sreifa if we know it's not true. But on the other side, if you say that Rov is a hanhaga, then you would be able to use Rov in the Makom Tartidisasri, because Rov doesn't tell us what is actually happening in reality. Rov just tells us the way we're supposed to paskin. And we can have two psukim that go against reality as long as they're not telling us what the Metzius is. And we have one more case of this, which is a case of Psachim Daf Yud of Shnei Shvilin. You have two paths. You know one of them is Tameh and one of them is Tahor. And you have two guys, they each walk down different paths. So what happens? Each guy had a Cheskas Tahara. He was Tahor beforehand. And now he has a Safik based on which path he went. How do we paskin? Do we say that he's Tameh or Tahor? So the Gemara says it depends how these two guys come and ask us their questions. If they come Bezeh Acher Zeh, one guy comes to Basin, we paskin, another guy comes to Basin, we paskin, then both guys are going to paskin Tahor. The first guy comes, he says, I have a chazaka that I was Tahor, and now I have a suffix of going down which path I went on, or he knows his path, suffix whether he's Tameh. We say, chazaka. Chazaka answers the suffix. Second guy, same thing, even though he went on the other path, we say that he's Tahor. But if these guys come Bevas Achas, if they come to us at the same time, two guys, they each went on one path, and they each had a chazaka that they were Tahor, Basin can't pass them with a straight face and say they're both Tahor. That's totally irrational. It's against reality. One of the paths was Tameh, and they each went down one of the paths. So at least one of these guys is Tameh. So in the case of Bevas Achas, when they come to us at the same time, Basin has to pass them at their Asr. Tosfos on the spot waters down the second case of Bevas Achas. Tosfos says that when we say Bevasa Achas is Tameh, that's only Midir Abanan. That's just an extra, it's extra Chumah Midir Abanan. But Midir Raisa, they would really both be Tahor. What's Tosfos saying? That Midir Raisa, they both be Tahor? That this is a case of Tartidisasri. It's a case where it's totally contradictory to say both guys are Tahor, because we know that one of them went on a Tameh path. But Tosfos, however, is telling us that Chazaka can be used b'makom tartidisasri. On a d'oraisa level, chazaka can tell us that each guy remains tahor, even though we know that in reality one of them has to be tameh for a fact. What does this tell us? This tells us that even though we had the rule earlier of ruba v'chazaka ruba adif, that rov, when it goes straight up against chazaka, rov is stronger. When you have a biro versus anhaga, you have something telling us, a biro, rov tells us that this is the reality, that this piece of meat is kosher, or that this woman is tahor. You have a certain rov that's going to beat anhaga. Chazaka just says, we don't really know what's happening, but we have to act in a certain way. Act like you're tahor. Act like this piece of meat is kosher. So the biro is stronger when it goes up head to head against the anhaga. Rov against chazaka is stronger. But there are certain cases where chazaka can work and cases where rov can't. Where a lot of times the strength of rov can work as a weakness. Rov was so strong that it was a biro and told us what actually happened, but in the case where it's a physical impossibility for it to happen, then we can't use rov. Chazaka, because of the fact that it wasn't actually telling us what happens in reality, therefore you could use it even in a case where it contradicts reality. Because chazaka doesn't tell us what actually happened, it's just telling us how we're supposed to act. And therefore, even though rov is stronger against chazaka head-to-head, there are cases where chazaka can work where rov doesn't, namely in this case of tarti desasri. So that's the end of the first sugya, where we had the question of Tosfos, of why is Rava so concerned with Ulas Kula? We could use Sfeik Sfeika. And that question was questionable because you use Sfeik Sfeika against the chazaka, and we saw Machlokes based on how Sfeik Sfeika works. The Rambam and the Rashba, the Rambam two steps, doesn't work against chazaka. Rashba, Rove, should work against chazaka unless you say the Rabbeinu Tam. We quoted a couple of cases in Chulin, which were proofs either way, depending on how you read them. And then we quoted this last idea of Rove and Sfeik Sfeika don't work Makam Tati Desasri. Rav Chanan explains because of a birur, but chazaka can work. And now we'll get to the second sugya. The second sugya is really the same sugya of Sfeik Sfeika. Rabbi called it Sfeik Sfeika B'yesh Mikzas Shilya B'lo Vlad. Sfeik Sfeika part two, if you will. This case had this sugya had two major points. Number one, we wanted to question the idea of whether Sfeik Sfeika, whether Sfeik Sfeika works at all based on seeming contradiction between two Gemaras, one of them implying Sfeik Sfeika works, one of them implying it doesn't, answering up that contradiction. And part two was questioning the validity of the Sfeik Sfeika that Tosfos uses in our case, that the Gemara implies in our case. Why the Sfeik Sfeika with Yesh Mikzas Shilya B'lo Vlad should be a valid Sfeik Sfeika? It seems to go against some of the fundamental rules that we have dictating what Sfeik Sfeika is all about. So the first part of the sugya is the stira of two Gemaras. There's a Gemara in Ksuvas, technically starts on Daf Ches and Beis, but we'll call it Ksuvas Daf Tes, and there's a Gemara in Beis and Daf Gimel. Ksuvas Daf Tes says, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Ha'omer Pesach Patsuach Matzasi, Neman La'osar Alav. If someone says that he lives with his wife on the first night of marriage and says Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, he found that she was not a Basula, so he's believed to make her Asertim. And the Rashi explains that it's based on Shavya Anafshi Chaticha de Yisura. We didn't really discuss this so much in Shir. We just said it's a question of whether this is a Din Neder, a Din Emanis. Fine. But he's Neman La'osra Alav. The Gemara continues. Why is he Neman La'osra Alav? Why is he believed to make his wife Aser to him? There's a Sfeik Sfeika that she's Mutter. Suffik whether she had Bia Tachtav or Lo Tachtav, right? Whether she in fact had Bia and lost her Basulim while they were married during Erisin, maybe it was beforehand. She's only going to be Asertim if she had Bia during Erisin, not before. And even if she had Bia during Erisin, there's another Suffik Ones, Suffik Ratzon. Maybe she was forced. She's only Asertim if she had Bia while they were married that was consensual. If she had Bia, even while they were married, and she was forced, she's not going to be Asertim. That's the valid Sfeik Sfeika. Now the Gemara goes on to answer that there are two specific cases where Neman La'osar Alav is true. There are only two cases where Rabbi Elazar is talking about, because there are cases where there's only one Sfeik. One case is talking about an Eishes Kohen, and Eishes Kohen does not have the Sfeik of Ones Ratzon, because even Ones is Asher to a Kohen. Even if she lived with someone of the Ones, that makes her Asher to her Kohen husband. So it's just a question of Tachtav and Lo Tachtav. And the other answer of the Gemara is that her father accepted Kedushin for her when she was less than 3 years old. And we know that if a woman has Bia less than 3 years old, her Basulim are Chozen, they're going to come back. So this woman who was married at exactly 3 years old, from the fact that she has no more Basulim, means she must have had Bia after she was three. If she had Bia before marriage, then the Basulim would have come back. So if she has no Basulim at the time of the marriage, then she must have had Bia during Erisin, and there's only one Suffolk of Ones Ratzon. Those are the two cases of the Gemara. But the Gemara definitely entertains and seems to accept the possibility of Sfeik Sfeika. That Sfeik Sfeika is a valid method of making someone mutter. The other Gemara is the Gemara in Beitza, Daf Gimel Beis. Beitza opens up that a Beitza Shnolda B'Yomtev is Aser. An egg which is born on Shabbos Yomtev is Aser for a whole bunch of reasons if you learn the first two Daf in Beitza. But we know that it's Aser. Now the Brisa on Gimel Beis tells a certain dinim about this Aser egg. One of the dinim is Sfeiko Aser, that even a suffik of whether it was born on Yantif or Shabbos, a suffik of whether it was born, let's say, Bechol or on Yantif, that's also going to be Aser. That's also going to be Aser. And the Gemara says, Nisarba Be'elef, Afilu Nisarba Be'elef, Kulan Aseros. That if it is mixed with 1,000 other eggs, it is Aser. What's the it? So the simple reading of the Brisa is that the it is the suffix. We just said a suffix is Aser, and if that suffix gets mixed in with 1,000 other eggs, then all the eggs are all Aser. So this Gemara seems to ignore the rule of Sfeik Sfeika, because you have an egg that in the first place you don't know whether it was born on Yantif or born Bechol, and that's one suffix, and the egg is mixed in with a whole bunch of other eggs. We say they're all Aser, even though there's two Sfeikos, because when I pluck one of the eggs from the group of 1,000, there's a suffix whether the egg that I'm taking is the one that was in question, that I don't know, was it born on Shabbos or Yantif, or it could be that it was one of the other 999 eggs that were totally valid. So question whether I took one of the 999 totally valid eggs, or whether I took the one that was questionable, and even if I took the one that was questionable, it might not be Aser in the first place, because maybe it was born Bechol. So that's a Sfeik Sfeika. The Gemara seems to ignore it. The Gemara says, Kulan Aseros. So what's the deal? When we look at the overall view of Shas, do we hold the Sfeik Sfeika, or do we not hold the Sfeik Sfeika? We presented four answers to this theorem. Four answers to this theorem between Ksuvas Daf Tes and Beitza Daf Gimel. Answer number one was the Ra'ah, and I guess said a little bit dramatically, is that the rule of Sfeik Sfeika does not really apply. We thought there was a rule of Sfeik Sfeika. It's not true. The Gemara in Beitza, Daf Gimel, is correct. Sfeik Sfeika is not a thing. We see that with the suffix egg that was Nisarva, but Elef, that Sfeik Sfeika doesn't work. So what happened in Ksivos? Why does the Gemara say Sfeik Sfeika makes the woman mutter? That Gemara was really working with the Cheskas Heter. That's the fact that a woman has a cheskas heter, that she was born, when she was born, she was permitted to her husband, and right at the onset of the marriage, she's permitted to the, right at the beginning of Eris, she's permitted to her husband. So that chazaka, or maybe it's a cheskas kashrus, whatever the chazaka, let's call it a cheskas kashrus. She has a cheskas kashrus. You want to get into exactly what that means, but she has a cheskas kashrus that she's allowed to live with her husband. So that chazaka, the hetira, is going to permit her to her husband, and either you could say that the cheskas kashrus is not really using Sfeik Sfeika, or it's some joint, the combining of the two factors of Sfeik Sfeika and cheskas kashrus that are going to allow her to be mutter to her husband, but Sfeik Sfeika alone really does not do the job. You need this cheskas kashrus. Then we question this cheskas kashrus according to the Ra'ah. This answer is the Ra'ah, the Bedek Habayis, and we threw a couple of questions at him. What about cheskas aguf? What about Onis having a kol? And we got out of those questions. I won't get into them now, but if we want to go over them after, you guys can for sure ask me, and we'll go over it then. But answer of the Ra'ah, Sfeik Sfeika really is not as strong as we thought, and it needs Chazaka Te'etera either in place or together with Sfeik Sfeika to permit something. That's answer number one. Answer number two is Rabbeinu Tam, who takes the opposite approach. That really the Gemara in Ksuvos is the simple Gemara. Sfeik Sfeika we see is a clear rule that's used in Ksuvos that permits the woman to her husband. So what's the deal in Beitza where we seem to not use Sfeik Sfeika? It was a total misread of the Gemara. We said in this Arva Be'elef Kulan Asuros, so we explain that it means that the suffix was in this Arva Be'elef and Kulan Asuros. That's not what it means. If the suffix is the one that gets mixed in, there's a valid Sfeik Sfeika. Suffix whether this egg was Aser in the first place, and even if it is Aser, suffix whether the one I plucked from the pile was this Aser egg. So the Gemara was not saying that's going to be Aser. That would be Mutter from Sfeik Sfeika. Well, the Gemara says in this Arav Elef, Kulan Asurus, it's an actual egg, an egg that's an Iser Vada. We know it was born on Yantif. That egg gets mixed in the pile. Then we say they're all going to be Aser. But really, Sfeik Sfeika is totally viable, both in Ksivos and in Beitza. But the reason the Gemara says in this Arav Elef, Kulan Asurus, is that the Iser Vada got mixed in, not the Iser Safik. That's answer number two. Answer number three is the Rashba, and the Rashba says it really depends when you could use Sfeik Sfeika. Sfeik Sfeika sometimes it's legitimate, sometimes it's not. Kind of in between the Ra'ah and the Rabbeinu Tam. So Sveika is legitimate in the case of bas achas, when you have two sveikos that work simultaneously. When both sveikos are going on at the same time, then that's going to be a valid sveika, like in ksuvos. But if the two sveikos are not going in at the same time, are not being used at the same time, like they are in beitza, they're not being used at the same time, then it's not going to be a valid sveika. What does this mean for two sveikos being used bevas achas, being said simultaneously? So we explain this in two ways. One way was the Beis Yosef, who said that the Rashba isn't really telling us something so fundamental that the certain sveikos in ksuvos and in beitza. It's all about when you ask the question of suffik. In ksuvos, when the person asks the question, is my wife mutter to me, at that time there are already two sveikos. There's a suffik whether it's zimtza tachtav or lo tachtav, and afilu tzimtzum or tachtav, there's a question of ones ratzon. But the case of beitza, where there's a suffix of whether it was usher in the first place, and suffix whether which egg, when the egg gets mixed in, suffix which one you took, the person's asking the question at two different stages. He asks the question when there's an egg, when the egg is born, there's suffix chol, suffix yantiv. He says, what's the deal with this egg? And we say it's usher because there's one suffix. The Rashba calls that kvar asarta. We already said it's usher. Now when it gets mixed in and we ask again, we also say that that's usher because these two sveikos didn't happen at the same time. You ask suffix number one, we pass an usher. You ask suffix number two, we still pass an usher. So, but according to the Beis Yosef, within the Rashba, if there was a case where a person really did ask the question after both sveikos, you have the same exact case of Beitza Daf Gimel, of a suffik chol, suffik yantiv, and then the egg gets mixed in, and it's just a question of when the person asks. Let's say he asks after the egg is already mixed in. According to the Rashba, that would actually be a good sveika. It's just about practically when a person asks the shaila of the suffik, can you say two sveikos? And we have yes in ksuvos, and he says no in Beitza. But in Beitza, you could construct a case where you do, in fact, have the sveikos simultaneously. That's the answer of the Beis Yosef, explaining the Rashba. And the Taz explaining the Rashba makes the Rashba much more fundamental. He said it's not about practically when a person is asking if my egg is usher. Oh, did he ask but only after one suffix, only after two sveikos? No, the sveikos themselves dictate whether something is called bas achas. What does that mean? You have two types of sveikos. Something could be suffix beguf or suffix betarovis. Suffix beguf means there's a question of this item. When we look at this item independently, there's an inherent question of whether it's valid or invalid. Suffix in tarovis means there's no question about a certain item that we're unsure about. Rather, it's a question of whether this item that we're looking at is the item that's usher. We don't know whether this item that got plucked from the pile is the questionable or the usher egg. So what does that mean for us? So the Taz explains that when you have two sveikos of the same type, when you have, let's say, shnayim beguf, the case of ksuvos, you have two sveikos that are beguf. This woman, we don't know whether she was in satakhtav or lo tachtav, and we don't know whether it was onis or ratzon. Those are both sveikos beguf, so that's called bevas achas. The case of beitza is echad beguf ve'echad b'taharuvas. One suffix tells us that the egg, we don't know whether it was an aser egg or not. We don't know if it was born on yantif or chol. The other suffix is a suffix b'taharuvas, whether the egg that we plucked from the pile is the questionable one in the first place. A suffix that's echad beguf, echad b'taharuvas, is not called bas achas, and therefore you need the two sveikos to be according to the same type within the Rashba. That is answer number 3, I guess you could call it 3A and 3B, of the stira between ksuvos and beitza. We had answer number 1, was the ra'ah who played down sveik sveika. Answer number 2 was Rabbeinu Tam, who said sveik sveika always works. We just had to read the Gemara and beitza differently. And answer number 3 was the Rashba, sometimes it works batzacha, sometimes it doesn't. The last answer we quoted at the end of Shir, in the name of the Darkei Moshe, who was quoting the Itzer v'Heter Ha'aruch, who says that there's another difference between the cases of ksuvos and beitza. In ksuvos, if we go with our sveik sveika, if we paskin sveik sveika mutter, then there are no problems at all. If we either say that it was lo tachtav, or we say that it was tachtav but it was onetz, then this woman is totally mutter to her husband. However, in the case of beitza, even if we go with our sveik sveika, let's say the egg that we plucked from the pile is not the questionable egg in the first place. Even if we say that the egg we're looking at is mutter, there still is a problem somewhere. Somewhere in that pile is an egg that's usser, or an egg that's a suffik. And since the sveik sveika does not allow us to totally permit the situation 100%, it's not going to be valid. And that's how he explains the steer between ksuvos and and beitza. That only a sfeik sfeika, which allows the entire situation completely, is going to be one that's mutter, but a sfeik sfeika, which doesn't totally allow the situation, is going to be usher. That's the first part of the sugya, the stira of the two gemaras, and then the answers, the four answers that we gave, some of which impact how we view sfeik sfeika in general. Now, the last part of the sugya is going to be certain rules that our sfeik sfeika in the gemara violates. The gemara says, what's Rava's chiddush, or what's Ula's chiddush, that we're machmir? So the chiddush is, ein mikzat shilya below vlad. That any time there's shilya, vlad must have come out. What does that mean? We have to be machmir because of ein mikzat shilya below vlad. From the fact that vlad came out, that's why we have to be machmir. But if it was possible, if there was yes mikzat shilya below vlad, and it was possible for shilya to come out without any vlad, then we wouldn't need to be machmir. Why? Seemingly because it's a sfeik sfeika. Suffic whether any Vlad came out at all, and even if Vlad came out, suffic whether it was Rove or less than Rove. Only Rove of a Vlad would make the woman Tameh. So when we have this question of the Shilya that comes out, we know Shilya comes out, question in the first place whether there was a Vlad in the Shilya. Even if there was a Vlad, there might have been less than Rove, and she's still Tahor. So it seems to be, if there was Yes Mikzat Shilya below Vlad, if there was a possibility that the woman gave birth to a Shilya, but didn't give birth to any Vlad in it, then we wouldn't need to be Machmir. The reason why we're Machmir is Ein Mikzat Shilya below Vlad, that every time Shilya comes out, Vlad comes out, and there's only one question of, was it Rove, or was it not Rove? And then the Gemara rejects this possibility and says, we learn Ein Mikzat Shilya below Vlad from some other place, and there's another chiddush to the question of Ula. But at one stage of the Gemara, there was a valid sfeik sfeika on the table. Maybe there was no Vlad at all. Even if there was Vlad, maybe it was less than Rove, and that would have permitted the woman to be Tahor. Now, this Gemara seems to blatantly violate two basic rules of sfeik sfeika. Number one, sfeik sfeika mishim echad. We saw this earlier in the case of Rav Huna, which was the Shach's defense of the Masas Binyamin, of using sfeik sfeika against Chazaka, right? We said it's really just one suffix, but did the knife become blunt before the Shechita or after the Shechita? Here too, it's one question. Was there Rov Vlad coming out that made her Tameh, or there wasn't Rov Vlad, and therefore she saw her? I don't care if there wasn't Rov Vlad, I don't care if it was no Vlad, if it was 8%, if it was 12%, you could ask me all the questions you want. It's really just one question, one suffix. Was it 50% or not? Was it 51%? That's one question that we have on the sfeik sfeika. It's mishem echad. And question number two is, it's not mishapech. One of the rules of sfeik sfeika is that you have to be asking the two sfeikos in both directions. Say the case in Ksuba Staff Test. You could ask the sfeik sfeika in both directions very easily. Either this woman was zinsa tachtav or lo tachtav, that if it was low tachtav, she had znus when they weren't married, she's for sure going to be mutter. And even if she had znus while they were married, maybe it was onis, maybe it was ratzon. That if it was onis, then she's still going to be mutter. If it was ratzon, then she's going to be usher. That's one way of asking it. And you could ask the totally opposite way. This woman who had znus, maybe it was onis, maybe it was ratzon. If it was onis, she's for sure going to be mutter to her husband. And even if it was ratzon, maybe it was tachtav, maybe it was low tachtav. If it wasn't when she was married to her husband, she's also going to be mutter. That stuff, that sfeik sfeika could be asked in both directions. But in our case, you can't ask the sfeik sfeika in both directions. You ask it in one direction. Maybe there was Vlad, maybe there wasn't Vlad. If there wasn't Vlad, she's tahor. And even if there was Vlad, maybe it was less than Rove, in which case she's good. Maybe it was more than Rove, in which case she's no good. That's fine. Perfectly acceptable sfeik sfeika. But now let's try to ask it in the other direction. Maybe there was less than Rove, or maybe there was more than Rove. And if there was less than Rove, she's good. And if there was more than Rove, well, it depends. Maybe there was no Vlad, or maybe there was Vlad. That doesn't make any sense. We're within the tzad saying that there was more than Rove, and now we're start asking whether there was any Vlad in the first place. Doesn't make any sense. So we can't ask the sfeik sfeika in both directions, and it seems to be shem echad. Those are the two problems. And first we're going to discuss the question of sfeik sfeika mishem echad, whether that's going to be a problem or not, and then we can begin to answer for this Gemara. So Tosfos and Daf Tes Min Aleph, we already quoted that one of the answers to Neman LaOser Alav was, and the question was, the Gemara asked if there's a sfeik sfeika, which means she's mutter. One of the answers was that she's married to a Kohen, and therefore it doesn't matter whether there's only a Ratzon. The other answer was, her father married her off, B'chusani Bashal HaShalom Yom Echad. Her father married off when she was less than 3 years old, and therefore the fact that she has no Besulim, this nus must have taken place during Erisin. If it took place before Erisin, then the Besulim would have come back. So the fact that the nus took place during Erisin, there's only one question of Onis or Ratzon. Tosfos on the spot asks, Even if we say it's a case where she was married off b'chusum ibas olashlam v'yom echad, and we know that this nus happened during erusin, there's still a sfeik sfeika. Safik ones, safik ratzon, and even if you're going to say ratzon, maybe this nus happened when she was a katana, and pitoi katana onesu. And maybe this nus happened when she was under bat mitzvah, and if she's under bat mitzvah, there's a rule, pitoi katana onesu. Any case where a woman has bia when she's less than 12, it's all considered ones. Even if it's consensual, because she doesn't have real da'as, so pitoi katana onesu. Even if she consents in the end, it's still considered ones. So Tosa says it's a valid fake sveika, even if you restrict the case that this nus happened during erusin, because you say the woman was married off b'chusin ibas olashlam v'yom echad, so this nus happened to have happened during erusin, there's still a fake sveika. Something whether it was an actual ones, or it was ratzon, and even if it was ratzon, maybe it happened when she was a katana, and therefore that's also considered ones. That's Tosus's question, and Tosus answers, at shame ones chadu. That fake sveika is only one suffix. Was it ones or was it not? Don't try to ask me, it's real ones, it's ones of a katana. It's all one question. Ones or not, fake sveika mishan echad is no good. That's Tosus. The Rambam, in Hilchos Yisurei Bia, Perek Gimel Halacha Beis, says that if a woman, a katana, has his nus, then among other things, she's going to be ushered to her husband. So the Magen Mishnah asks, what about the rule of pitoi katana onesu? What about the rule that for a katana to have nus, it's always considered ones because she lacks da'as? If it's always considered ones, then she should only be ushered to her husband if her husband's a kohen. But the Rambam says she's ushered to her husband in all aspects. So the Magen Mishnah answers, it must be that the Rambam does not paskin like the rule of pitoi katana onesu. Doesn't paskin that a katana who has nus is automatically ones. And says the Magen Mishnah further, where does the Rambam get this from? He gets this from Tosus's question on the Gemara and Ksuba, Staff Test. Tosus had such a good question of, even if we restrict the case to Zimta Tachtav, there's still a Sfeik Sfeika, Sfeik Onis, Sfeik Ratzon, even Imtim Shlomo Ratzon, Sfeik Katana Haisa, Peter Katana Onesu. That was such a good question that Rambam must paskin, according to the Magen Mishnah, that Peter Katana Onesu is not a thing. That's not we don't pass him like that, and therefore the whole question falls away. But the Magen Mishnah doesn't give explaining the Rambam doesn't give the answer of Shemon Eschadu. The Gemara doesn't say that the reason the Tosafot's question was no good is that it's Mishem Echad. The Magen Mishnah explains the Rambam that the reason the Rambam says that the question is no good is Peter Katan Onisu being an invalid rule. So according to the Rambam, that he has to answer Tosafot's question by eliminating the rule of Peter Katana Onisu and not going with the answer of Shemon Eschadu, seems to be that according to the Rambam, Shemon Eschadu would not be a violation of a valid Sfeik Sveika. It would not be a violation of Sfeik Sveika. So answer number one, according to our Gemara, that it violates Shemon Eschadu could be that it goes like the, according to the Rambam, you don't need Shnei Shemos, it could be one Shemos. What about the fact that it's not matapech, that it can't be said in both directions? So the Shach, in his Kuali Sfeik Sveika, quotes the Ramami Panu, who gives a svara. He gives a reason for why a Sfeik Sveika that's not matapech is no good. Why, sorry for the double negative, I'll go with Hebrew. Why a Sfeik Sveika she'ino matapech is invalid. Right? If there's a Sfeik Sveika she'ino matapech that can't be said in both directions, why is that not a good Sfeik Sveika? And he answers, in the name of Ramami Panu, that a Sfeik Sveika that can only be said in one direction is a suffix whether that's a valid Sfeik Sveika. And a suffix whether something's a valid Sfeik Sveika is not a good Sfeik Sveika. That's what the Ramami Panu says. Okay. So how could this be used to answer our question? So the Shach goes further and says that based on this Ramami Panu, that a Sfeik Sveika that can only be said in one direction is only invalid because the suffix whether there's a Sfeik Sveika in the first place. So there are going to be certain cases of Sfeik Sveikas that can only be said in one direction. Certain Sfeik Sveikas that are Sfeik Sveikas she'enam matapich, that can be valid. How? If it makes logical and maybe even chronological sense to say one direction versus the other. And again, this answer is a very fine chiluk, and we really have to look inside the Shach to see how he splits between different cases, because it seems to be very similar in cases where Sfeik Sveikas is used and Sfeik Sveikas is not used. But he says, in our case of the Mitzvah Sheder B'lo Vlad, the first suffix you have to ask is suffix whether there was a Vlad in the first place or not. Only from there can you ask suffix whether there was rov lad or less than rov lad. So in our case, there's a logical reason to ask to have the order of the sfeikos, and therefore the sfeik sfeika shalom mitapeches is going to be a valid sfeik sfeika. And again, this answer you could try from today till tomorrow to answer the chiluk between the case of sfeik sfeika she'enu mitapeches, does that work and don't work? Again, we have to look inside the words of the shach, but that's what he says, that when there's a logical reason and also chronological reason to say one sfeik first, then we go with that suffix, and therefore it's not going to be a suffix whether we have a sfeik sfeika. There's a logical reason to say one of the sides first, and therefore that's going to be a valid sfeik sfeika. That's what he uses to answer our question. Okay? And therefore, according to the Shach, our Gemara does not violate the rule of sfeik sfeika she'inu mitapeches, because there's a valid reason to say that distinction, since they say one side versus the other. And the last thing we said, Torah Shlomim, which also was a fine chiluk, he says that the rules of Sfeik Sfeika Metapech and Sfeik Sfeika Mishem Echad are very connected to each other. He says that the reason why every Sfeik Sfeika that She'ena Metapecha, the Sfeik Sfeika that can only be said in one direction is no good, is because it violates the rule of Sfeik Sfeika Mishem Echad. And therefore, once we've answered the question of Sfeik Sfeika She'ena Mesapeches by using the Ramami Panu, we have also answered the question of Shemon Eschatu. We've also answered the question of Sfeik Sfeika Mishem Echad, and we don't have to restrict ourselves to Rambam, who doesn't hold the Sfeik Sfeika Mishem Echad. We could say we generally do hold that Sfeik Sfeika Mishem Echad is no good, just like Tosfos says, but we could get out of it by saying, since the Sfeik Sfeika She'ena Mesapeches question was answered, and that's linked to Sfeik Sfeika Mishem Echad, then the Sfeik Sfeika Mishem Echad question is answered as well. And again, also a fine chiluk, because it's not necessarily a two-way relationship, in the sense that every Sfeik Sfeika She'ena Mesapeches violates the rule of Shemon Mishem Echad, but not necessarily every rule of Shemon Mishem Echad violates Sfeik Sfeika She'ena Mesapeches, and therefore a little bit of a tzarchi in how you'd be able to use one to answer the other. But nonetheless, the second part of the sugya, the stira between the Gemaras and Ksuvos and Beitza, with four potential answers, and again, the Sfeik Sfeika in our Gemara seems to violate two fundamental rules of Sfeik Sfeika Mishem Echad and Sfeik Sfeika She'ena Mesapeches, and getting out of it with the Ramami Panu, getting out of it with Shita Sarabam, and getting out of it with the Torah Shlomim in the end. Everyone should have a great day, and hopefully have much hatzlacha in chazaring all of the sugyos.